Now, Jones and Keefe
on WEEI. Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Going 2 to Abreu. So for 2 tonight, but he's hit it hard. He drives one high and deep into right center field towards the Red Sox bullpen. It is back in. It is off the top of the wall, and it caroms into center field. This could be an inside the park homer. Abreu runs third. He gets the go-ahead. He comes home. Head first side. Inside the park homer for Willier Abreu.
Oh, what a night for the Red Sox last night, Mego. Inside the Parker, grand salami for Willier Abreu. Red Sox score 13 runs. Total coincidence that Jaron Duran looked like he was pointing something out from the starting pitcher last night, Chase Burns, with the offense waking up and scoring 7 before they could even get through the first inning. Was it 7 with 1 out or 2 outs? Thank you.
It was 1. Yeah, he made a third of an inning.
Thank you. Before they pulled Chase Burns last night. 13 more runs. They scored 15 on Saturday. They've won a couple. If you want to look on the bright side, Mego, you know I normally do. They've won 2 out of 3 with a lot of runs in those games. Is it possible the offense is pulling out of their funk and turning things around? And if so, why?
Why do you ask it that way?
What do you mean?
Why?
Why?
There's just something curious going on there. It's not anything nefarious. Mm. Like, if you see a pitcher tipping pitches, it's well within reason to go out and say, this is what he's doing. He's squeezing his glove before he's doing X. Like, it's not like that's, I know it's not, well, doesn't make anybody on the other team happy.
Yeah, it's, I would, it's not.
We got ourselves a bona fide cheating scandal.
It's not banging on a garbage
tipping.
Can.
He's a kid who doesn't know how to hide it.
Fine. It's not banging on a garbage can. It's not an Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not sustainable. Like, if you're picking up on another pitcher tipping his pitches, I love this quote from Francona after the game. Francona was asked about how Burns getting knocked around last night. He says Cora's one of the best at that, meaning
it's a little bit of a shot.
Picking up on, exactly.
It's a little bit of a shot
and,
there.
And, you know, Francona knows. He managed him.
He's really got an eye for that kind of thing.
He said they were certainly ready. They were coming out hacking, and they were squaring it up pretty good, I'll say. So, fine. It's not a full-blown cheating scandal. I'm needling
blown,
a little
it's
bit.
It's not half of a cheating scandal. It's just a little bit of an awkward look that the other manager says, he has a knack for that.
Yeah.
He sure does know how to pick out those when he's tipping.
And
he's sure got an eye for what's happening on the mound out there.
And, you know, I would say that's not sustainable. If that's why they teed off offensively, and if you want to be fair, they scored 7 runs against Burns, mm-hmm. albeit all very quickly. They still scored 6 after he came out of the game.
So it's not rob Abreu of his night.
It's not like they did nothing offensively against other pitchers, but the bulk of their offense came when this kid's out there tipping pitches. I would just say that's not sustainable.
And it's all connected, because what have we been saying all season? That Garrett Crochet needs run support. So then when he gets a lot of run support early, it frees him up to be a little bit more aggressive out there and to move it along. And so I think it is all connected. Is it sustainable? Can you repeat it? Maybe if you're going up against another kid who doesn't know what he's showing from, like, literally right off the bat. So I don't think that they discovered something. They discovered what that kid shows on the mound. And other than that, I don't think it's like, okay, now they're rolling. Now they're going to have this great offense that everybody expected.
So you don't think the offense is turning it around?
No. I think that I don't want to take anything away from last night. I just don't think it's replicable. I think it was a scenario, and you can look at Cora and say, awkwardly, that's one of the things that he does well. Great. They got a win last night. Is that something that they're going to trot out every single night? I just don't think so. I think that you're not going to be in that specific scenario.
So one reason I would say it's possible they're turning it around. Possible, Mego. Mm-hmm.
You'll allow for it.
I'll allow for it. Anthony looks like he belongs all of a sudden. Because I was really starting to roll my eyes at, well, it's a really good at bat. And boy, he looks really comfortable in there. He looks like he belongs. Like, I'm at a certain point when you're hitting 74 or whatever he was hitting.
You're
at
a
one
numbers
point.
Guy. You're like, well, the numbers don't show it.
Well, I'm
not reading the body
at
language.
At some point, I do need production. Like, I can only say that for so long. His first game, fine. He looked like he belonged. I agreed. He went 0 for whatever it was in his first game, but he looked right and he looked like he belonged. I'll allow for that. When we're going on a few weeks and there's zero production, I get a little tired of hearing it. But the batting average is over 200 now. He's over the Mendoza line.
Okay.
210. He has multiple hits in three straight. He had three against the Jays with a couple of doubles, and then back-to-back two-hit games, all singles, against Toronto and Cincinnati. He had a double the game prior against Toronto, four-game hitting streak. Like, if he's going to start hitting, that's a way to turn the offense around. And I know he's not out there yet, but Bregman spoke with reporters before the game, says there's a chance he could play before the All-Star break. He's getting closer to playing. So if you get Bregman back and Anthony's going to finally wake up and start hitting, isn't that a way to turn the offense around?
Yeah, and if Jaron Duran wakes up a little bit more, then maybe you really have something there. But at the same time, I think if you're looking at Anthony, I know you said that he has some production in some other games going back to the Blue Jays series, but again, I just think I don't want to throw out last night because I don't think that's fair. I would just say from an offensive perspective, if you're looking at last night and saying, well, look, if they can do that on any given night, it's not any given night. It's the situation that they were in. And to the texter's line, tipping pitches is the pitcher's fault, not cheating at all. Yeah, totally agree. You faced a young, inexperienced pitcher who doesn't have control of that. And so you took advantage of it, like, awkwardly. Kudos to Cora on that. Great. Are you going to do that in a series, every series going forward? No. Otherwise, you would have done it. Like, you did it, you got into a scrap with the Angels over a similar thing. It just doesn't happen that often where it's that aggressively easy to tell.
I like this text as well. Reading tip pitches is fine, but it doesn't mean you're good.
No, like, it doesn't. Like, that's what I'm saying.
That's a guy, right. But that kind of sums up how I feel. Like, it is borderline. Like, if you got to stoop to it, you got to stoop to it. Like,
what do you
how
mean?
Good are, how good are you really?
You're playing on the margins there.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. And look, with the way the Red Sox are going, pull out all the stops, Cora. Whatever.
You want to know what Cora does for the team. This is the kind of thing that he gives them an edge in.
You know what, Mega?
Even Francona's standing there saying, nobody reads pitches being tipped like Alex Cora. That guy just has an eye for that kind of
thing. You know what, Mega? Fair. I'll stand down. I want to know what Alex Cora does. This is what the man does. So if you want to push the margins and you want to win games, and this is what Cora's good at, pull out all the stops and all the cheating scandals you want.
This is where he's really communicated his message to the team, because you get Jaron Duran out there going like, oh, skipper, I see something. I say something. This is the leadership there.
No, I think that's fair. Another text here. Red Sox do this. They hit for one game and disappear. Don't get fooled. Well, I'm just telling, it's now two times in the last three. So maybe that's random. I thought the Toronto series, we talked about this yesterday. I thought the Toronto series kind of summed up what they are, where they had a scoring differential for the series, but they lost the series. Just like on the year, they have a positive scoring differential, which should be predictive of more wins to come, right? You're a better team than you've shown is the idea of scoring differential. But somehow, as of yesterday, they were three games under 500. So I thought the Toronto series summed it up. If they're going to start clustering games like this together a couple of times, 15 the other day, 13 last night, tip pitches be damned.
Okay, but if you're not winning series, who cares?
Okay, no, I agree with that. But I'm just saying, now it's two times in the last three games. Let's see if the offense starts picking up. And I'll allow for Anthony waking up,
yeah,
getting the offense going. Abreu's return is getting the offense. He's been on the IL for a chunk of time. He comes back, he has a game like that.
Twitch chat says, is this real life? The manager shouldn't point out tells. We're not saying that. We're just saying that other managers saying that's his thing.
Yeah.
That's Cora's calling card.
I'll just say it's on brand for Cora, and Francona agrees. Again, Cora is one of the best at that. They were certainly ready. They were coming out hacking, and they were squaring it up pretty good. Francona's annoyed. Like, and they're annoyed. They're like, oh, great, this guy's stooping to his crap again, his nonsense again. It's not illegal. No one's asking him to be suspended. But it's like, oh, great, that's how Alex Cora has to beat us. He has to work hard on identifying tip pitches as opposed to actually beating us straight up. So Francona's annoyed, and I don't think it's sustainable. For one game, great. But you're going to need more than tip pitches to turn the offense around. And I'm trying to give you examples of why I think the offense could turn it around. Abreu's return, Bregman's on the horizon, Anthony's waking up. All right, maybe the offense is going to turn it around even without Rafi Devers.
Yeah, I think that's totally legit. I just wouldn't look at last night and say this now shows that not only has the offense, the bats woken up, but that they're going to start scoring in meaningful points of the game, because that's really what the run differential is about. Yeah, they can score in these huge chunks like we've seen, but it's largely when it's a meaningless point in the game. When you have guys that get constantly stranded on third and you're trying to stay in the game or get back into it, for whatever reason, a lot of times you're not able to do that.
No, I think that's fair. And they have to be better.
I think another positive is that you finally have, to use the Red Sox word, alignment on a game where Crochet is starting and you have run support. And it wasn't even a great night by him.
No, I mean, Crochet started great. The first three innings or whatever it was, he looked unreal. And then he was very, very eminently hittable. I mean, Rafaela almost made an incredible catch deep into the triangle in center field that could have bailed him out. But that would have been a very, very difficult catch. So, you needed it last night because Crochet, by his standards, was hittable. 8 base runners in 6 innings and 5 runs, 4 earned. So that's not been the standard that we've seen out of Crochet. I want to get to Bregman, his timeline, and some comments he had about what Scott Boras had to say last week, a potential extension here in Boston. Quick flurry of NBA updates, though, and some are going back to the end of last hour. Not very surprising. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 4-year extension with OKC. 285 Supermax, 285 million, I should say, Supermax to stay with the Thunder through 2031.
Did he ever get an agent? Was he with an agent or no? Because remember, that was the whole thing where it was like, why would you have an agent if you're getting a Supermax anyway?
Good question.
Like, what is the point of negotiating that?
I'm sure you want to firm up like some of the language in your deal, but in terms of the money, I agree with that. You don't need an agent to negotiate a Supermax. We all know what it is. It's predetermined. Now, you know, some of the language and protection in the contract you probably want.
Yeah, because he parted ways with Thad Foucher.
Thad Foucher.
Of course. Rough, the Thad Foucher.
Rough look for him. Old friend Gershon Yabusele is back in the NBA. Two years, $12 million with the Knicks.
2 years, $12 million with the Knicks.
What can the Celtics do on the non-taxpayer mid-level or whatever they have available to them? It's like 5 and change.
Yeah, it's
so
not
like,
a lot.
That's a player you could have brought in. My guy Kayvon Looney signed yesterday. Like, there are a bunch of guys on like those two-year, $12 million deals.
Celtics that's not really who I want, though.
No, I'm just saying Celtics could have been in the mix on those type of players. And then here's a big one. You just mentioned the Bucks. Miles Turner.
Whoa.
4 years, $107 million to sign with the Bucks, plus a player option. He's got a full trade kicker, et cetera, et cetera. He is leaving Indiana. Mm-hmm. So Indiana's going to be way down. No Halliburton. Turner's gone. And if they're signing a player like Turner, to your point, I'd imagine Giannis isn't going anywhere.
No, that means they're trying to get back into it. And I wouldn't be surprised if they try to do some kind of crazy trade with Damian Lillard, if they can find somebody else who's trying to offload somebody kind of equal on their books and just swap that. That might be beneficial to both those teams in that scenario.
Okay, so there's an NBA update. We'll get to some tiers coming up on a Tier Tuesday. Yard games. Think horseshoes, cornhole, sprinkler out in the yard. Things like this. We're going to get to it,
Holy
Mego.
Holy.
We're going to holy board. We're going to get to it in Tier Tuesday coming up. Meantime, I've referenced this a couple of times. Alex Bregman spoke before the game. He talked on the field on Sunday with Tom Caron, and then he did like a full media scrum in the dugout yesterday. This is Bregman on his potential timeline for a return.
Do you feel like you could be back ahead of the All-Star break?
Possibly. We'll see. Today was really good, so we'll see what the group said. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because today was the best it's been, but we'll just got to see how we come out of it tomorrow and everything like that. But could be here soon. We'll see.
Okay. Your read on that, Mego. Is he coming back before the All-Star break?
I guess we have to see. Is what I take away from that.
I'll tell you, those comments read better than they sound. Listen, hearing him, and that's the first time I've heard it. I saw the one from Bradfo yesterday. It was almost impossible to hear. No offense to Bradfo, but the audio was almost impossible to hear. Nick found a cleaned up version there. Those comments read a hell of a lot better than they sounded because he's like, "Hey, will you be back before the All-Star break? Possibly, sure. Anything's possible. I could come back before the All-Star break. We'll see."
Anything's possible is never positive unless it's KG saying it.
Yeah. Now, it does make me feel a little better about him being ready to go in the second half.
Like, Jones, if you went into the office and asked for a raise and the response was anything's possible.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really sound positive.
Well, it's not closing the door because I've definitely been told no plenty of times on things like that. So that's
but
not closing the door.
Possible.
Possibly.
Like, you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah. Yeah. You're telling me there's a chance.
Okay.
Yeah. This is, when I would ask girls to prom in high school. How'd that go?
No.
Oh!
No, that was, okay, so that's true.
Possibly.
When I asked Kat to marry me, what was her answer?
No.
Oh, come on.
How many times did you have to
Possibly.
Ask?
How many times did I have to ask Kat?
Yeah.
I had to feel it out.
Seven!
I had to feel it out before I actually went through with it.
7 times the charm.
So I feel worse hearing that than reading that, to be honest. I do think that Bregman, I feel a little better about him being ready to go to start the second half. Because what Cora had said prior is, well, you know, we think he's going to be ready after the All-Star break or we're hoping he's ready before the All-Star or after the All-Star break. And I'm like, oh, is he not going to be ready? I want him ready that first game.
Yeah, you're starting to go, okay, we're talking about August.
Correct. Because if he's not ready that first game, then we're basically up against the trade deadline and it's almost August and now this thing's really lingered. And I'm not questioning anything with Bregman, though I know some are. But I was just hoping he'd be back way sooner than this. This is dragging more than I expected. He also was asked about Boris's comments from last week that they're willing to listen on a contract extension. Bregman said yesterday, quote, we're open to listening on anything that they have to say. He followed that up with, it's definitely a high priority to get a long-term deal in place. The one thing I will say that maybe I was overlooking, because I don't think he's going to opt out. I think he's going to not get offered more than the $40 million AAV that he has. I don't think he's going to get a better deal than he has. He didn't have a deal that he wanted last year. He's another year older, and he's been hurt. Now, he was wildly productive this year while he was playing, but he's another year older, and he's been hurt. I don't think teams that were afraid to pay him a year ago are going to be lining up to pay him, but he does prioritize a long-term deal. So if a team's going to throw a guaranteed long-term deal at him, maybe he would have some eyes for it. I don't think he's going to get more short-term annually, but maybe he would prioritize the security. He also said, quote, I expected to love playing here, meaning Boston, and I've definitely loved playing here. It's a great place to play baseball. Being able to play for this organization is awesome. My expectations were all very positive, and it's definitely lived up to those positive expectations. I don't know that it's gone exactly how he envisioned it going here in Boston since they've underachieved, but he's not saying anything bad about the Red Sox. Do these comments change your perspective on the discussion about Bregman yesterday whatsoever?
So we talked about my stances. I really just want them to extend him, rework something, get him here in a long-term, more guaranteed deal. You think that they should call his bluff because he's not going to be as desirable, even maybe as he was last offseason, because he's been injured and he's older. It doesn't really affect anything for me. Like, when I hear him say that, does that make me think that the Red Sox have more leverage in this situation? Not really.
No, him saying he...
He sounds more amenable than maybe I would have expected him to be publicly.
Him saying my priority, or it's a priority to have a long-term deal, gives me a little more pause than I had yesterday. Like, I'm a little more fearful of it than yesterday. I'd still call his bluff. No one was lining up to give you a long-term deal last offseason. Why would they now? Would be my question. And if you lose him because, as you said, Mego, they're pretty bad at reading the market for some of these guys, then I'm sure I'd rip them for that. But that's the way I'd play it in the meantime.
Do you think there's any way that
Because he can opt out and you can still sign him to a long-term deal in the offseason. You can still do that.
I don't know if he's this manipulative. Do you think that there's any way that he's reading the temperature of the fan base and saying, I love it here, basically saying a love letter to playing in Boston, but saying that he wants the longer guaranteed deal, knowing that maybe there's some leverage for him in being somebody that they can actually have fans excited for a bobblehead over, or like actually buy a jersey of?
It's a good question.
And him saying, like, I really want to be here, guys. I want to grow old and gray here. This is where I want to, I've always wanted to play for the Red Sox. They won't give me the long guaranteed deal. Yeah. Like, I wonder if that's a little bit of a play.
I don't think he's that calculated, but I'll tell you who might be that calculated is Boris.
Representation.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's why SGA should look back into getting an agent.
Perhaps. Now, a couple of items here. Number one, you just mentioned Damian Lillard. What will they do with him?
Uh-oh, what?
The Bucks have waived him. And
wow.
They're going to use the stretch provision on the remaining $113 million to spread that out over five seasons to give them some cap relief, which none of us are worried about. Lillard has been released, though, by the Bucks, probably
okay.
To make room for Miles Turner to sign.
I would guess that they had been shopping him around for a little bit, trying to see if there was some kind of swap that would make sense for them.
And then we have news on the Bruins as well. I don't know if it rises to breaking news level.
A fourth liner, not really, no.
Okay, it does not. Victor Arvidsson, Bruins have dealt for him. We mentioned they need some depth. He had a 27-point season last year for Edmonton. Early in his career, he was a player.
How old is he?
He is going to be 32, it looks like.
Okay.
Victor Arvidsson is already 32. He'll be 33 next day. So he'll turn 33 late in the season. He already is 32. Early in his career, a couple of 30-goal seasons, a couple of 60-point seasons when he was in Nashville. He spent last year with Edmonton. He had a stint with the Kings in between. So he's probably a fourth-line player, it sounds like. I was looking up his contract, Nick, quick. I think he signed a 2-year, $8 million deal with Edmonton, so I think he has $4 million left. So that's a big chunk of your cap space.
Yeah.
If I have the numbers right. Now, it's a trade. Is Edmonton retaining any salary? I don't know. Again, fill in the gaps for me if I'm missing anything. I'm trying to catch up to this on the fly.
He had no trade, so they might have eaten some money to get rid of him.
Okay. So, right. Maybe it's not the full $4 million that at least I'm seeing on his contract. But that is what it looks like to me.
That makes me worried about who they're going to sign for.
Well, that's again, if you have $13
million, third line, then
if you have $13 million and you're spending
four of it,
if it's that much, again, Edmonton could retain some salary.
Really tight there.
That's a lot to spend on a fourth line.
When the free agency market is where it is, and you're going to have to probably get in a bidding war with at least one other team, like that puts you in a little bit of a tight spot.
But
that makes me worry that they're going to be doing a couple of those $3 to $4 million deals in which I go, yeah, this is smelly. No, right. Thank you. Smelly, thank you.
We were hoping for Besser or Ehlers. Looks like you're going to get yourself Victor Arvidsson. Which, again, if this was, I don't know, 2019, it'd be a pretty good move. 617-779-7937. You could jump in here. Billy will have more details in trending. And when we come back, we'll tier off yard games on a Tier Tuesday. Next.